Selective Dissonance is interested in helping you experience horror from a different perspective. Looking at horror through the societal lens of marginalized communities, we hope to give you original scares birthed from everyday experiences that may be sources of fear for individuals within those communities. The moments where one passing interaction with a neighbor or seemingly innocuous camping trip can change your life insurmountably. The stories you will hear are all fiction, but that doesn't mean that there isn't a version of this anxiety and trepidation plaguing someone's stream of consciousness at this very moment. Are you ready? Let's begin.
Settled around the little fire pit in my backyard, the night was young, and it all started like any other one of our hangouts. Julian was laid on his back, facing the fire, as he listened to the horrifying tales his sister was talking up. Esther had always been an amazing storyteller, with a knack for horror. She was a jack of all trades, but her masterful way of spinning her words into something so spine-chilling made her seem like she lived, breathed, and slept horror. She sent my girlfriend into a spiral of conspiracy theories with how slowly and convincingly she had told a story of a man that had once lived in the house two stories down. That night's story had been something special. A classic in every sense of the word. It was a story about an infamous house about 40 miles away. No, there was no violent family slaying or hidden serial killer. It was pretty tame. It was just built near an old coal mine. It's the only one on the lot. The people who lived in the house endured the likes of COPD, asthma attacks, lung cancer, pulmonary disease. All of them died in the house. Their deaths had to be long and painful, but Esther was good at adding in little details she knew would draw her audience in. "Investigators have gone in and spent the night," she said, flashing her hand so suddenly it made Ariana jump next to me. I remember I had to pull her close and tell her it was just a story. "And they've heard footsteps and heavy, wheezing breaths right in their ear. Cries for help were recorded on EVP, with strangled, choking breaths." She had Julian wrapped around her finger by that point, and I remember he'd leaned in. "To make it worse, they began to feel their throats get heavy, as if they were choking on their own lungs. They had to go in on a shift schedule. It was so bad, and some of the investigators got sick after. Nobody's been brave enough to go in alone since then." And that was how Julian's bright idea started.
"We should try," he said, and I could feel Ari tense up in my arms. But before I could stop him, Esther did.
"Did you not hear what I just said? It's near a coal mine, numbnuts. People got sick and died there, Jules."
"Yeah, but..."
God, Julian could never take no for an answer.
"We could wear those fancy masks Dad wears at work for the dust, and bring my old tape recorder, and then we can..."
"Listen, Jules, I'm not gonna go sacrifice my own lungs for some little story I told you just because you want to go. I can imagine Odessa and Ariana are in on this with me."
Both Ari and I nodded, but Julian was insistent and downright stupid.
"Then I'll go alone."
"Julian Knowles, that is the stupidest idea I've ever heard you say out loud. You don't have a way to get there. You don't even know where it is."
"You said it's in Arvonia. I can just take a bus and walk."
"Does the bus even go to the mine?" Ariana was trying desperately to keep her cool, but we both knew Julian was dead serious. So did Esther.
"I can imagine it doesn't go to the..." "Jules, I'm not letting you walk to that fucking house. No way in hell!"
Esther was trying her best to open his eyes, but Julian was already up from his spot in the grass.
"What's 40 miles?"
Jules and Esther lived a few doors down, regrettably, and he slipped himself out of my backyard before we could stop him. I could hear his footsteps running down the street, and as Esther turned around, I could hear her question as she said it.
"I'm gonna have to go with him, aren't I?"
"Es, don't go with him. Just tell him it's dangerous. I mean, how old is the house?"
Ariana was just hoping, praying that something changed Julian's mind.
"I don't know. Like 150 years at least. I'm just scared he'll get hurt and I won't be there to help him.
But you can't tell your parents?"
Before I could think I had spoken, and Esther made a face as she was interrupted.
"I mean that they don't care what he does so long as he gets home in time for football practice."
I'm more just worried that if it's just the two of us, we both get hurt, and then I won't be able to... I'll go. Right as I said it, I could feel Ariana tense up again. I looked down right as she looked up. But I couldn't just let them get hurt.
No. Odessa, you can't!
I want to just make sure they won't get hurt, babe. I promise I won't go inside. I'll just stay in the car, and then I'll help... Odessa, you don't have to go. I can handle Julian by myself, have for almost 8 years. Esther was looking at me like I was crazy, but I guess I looked sure of myself, even if I didn't feel it. Fine. He's probably going to want to go tomorrow night, so... I love your brother, S. I really do, but... We seemed to speak in unison as we said,
"He's an idiot."
The next night, around sunset, it had started to rain. Esther and I pleaded with Julian to not go, that the road would be dangerous, but it wasn't long until we stood in front of the old limestone house. The property was lined with trees, blocking our view of the outside world as he drove in slowly. We had gone from seeing across the plains for ages to isolated, alone. It was daunting. Donning our raincoats and face masks, we had stepped in slowly. Even Julian, in all his barely harnessed excitement, moved carefully, as though the house would collapse. It was only about 1,500 square feet and only 2 stories, but once we were inside, it felt endless. Like one wrong step would lead us down a rabbit hole we'd never be free of. Right away there was a pressure in my chest, like I was being stood on. I should have taken it as the first sign, but I pressed on, letting Julian and his favorite flashlight lead the way. Turning back, I watched Esther step inside like an anxious deer. As scared as I was to be here, it was clear her terror was tenfold. Finally, the mistress of horror was crumbling beneath her own words. "It's fucking creepy in here," she said, speed walking to catch up to Julian and I. She moved like a cryptid, and I could just think of the legends in my head. A long-legged woman creeps through the night, looking for anyone to listen to her stories until the end of time. In all honesty, that was what kept me going as we followed Julian into the kitchen. It was weird seeing the house the way it was. It looked as though the last people who lived here had left in a hurry. A sharp contrast to Esther's story, and one that added a level of urgency. Everything was coated in a fine layer of dark dust, as if frozen in time. "What's this?" Esther and I hated when Julian used those two little words, and it could only mean that he...
"Jules, put that down. It's a rusted over knife. It doesn't look very dangerous to me. It's not even sharp.
You're just trying to get tetanus at this point." I watched as dust billowed up into his face as he tossed the knife back down on the counter and jumped back. It had been lighthearted from then on. Just Julian finding little old things, with the two of us doing our best to relax and not think about where we were or why. Cycling back around through the kitchen into the living room, we found the piece de resistance, the old fireplace. I got to work inspecting the ashes, moving what was left of the embers with one of the pokers. Julian grabbed one to mess with, and I worried for his own safety. That boy in sharp objects is a scary mix. Esther had lagged behind at this point, but as she caught up to us, Julian got himself busy with his little ghost hunt.
"Begone, spirits! This is my house now!"
I barely had time to make a joke before I heard the creaking. Turning towards the noise, I fully expected to see Julian halfway up the steps, only to be met with our favorite white boy still in the same spot, frozen with what I could only assume was curiosity. "Julian, did you hear that?"
"Yeah."
It was only then I realized he had a bit of fear in his voice. Despite the slight muffle from his mask, the little tremble was a dead giveaway. Staring up at where the beam of the flashlight hit the stairs, I saw nothing.
"S? Jules, we should go."
I started, but Julian was gone. He never had a single hesitant bone in his body. He never truly had any fears, just quick spooks. And there he was, standing at the top of the stairs with his sister hot on his trail, wielding his new weapon. Julian felt like the king of the world marching right onto the second floor.
"Or I can just stay down here."
Sighing as I was left alone once again, I shook my head, turning back to the fireplace. Looking into the ashes, I could almost feel the old tenants. I could almost be the old tenants. A sense of despair seemed to envelop me. It was deep and guttural. It spiraled over my head and around my body, squeezing me in a big embrace, and almost refusing to let me go.
I could feel myself starting to cry, and the only thing that snapped me out of it was the feeling of someone wiping my tears away. I nearly jumped out of my skin. My senses came back one by one. I could feel the pressure of the mask on my face. I could see the details in the fireplace in front of me. I could taste the blood filling my mouth from biting my tongue. And finally, I could hear the croaky, whispering voice in my ear.
Leave while you can.
There was no way in hell I had to be told twice. My brain was screaming for me to run for the front door and never look back. But my body shot itself to the staircase, and I opened my mouth to call for Julian and Esther. As I got further up the steps, I could feel my chest start to tighten. The pressure that fell on me when I first walked in had started to dissipate, but this was tenfold and knocked the wind right out of me. I hardly let out a pitiful squeak as the air was stolen right out of my lungs.
Odessa? You okay?
I could hear Esther whisper shouting at the top of the steps, but looking up was hard. The most I could do was readjust the mask on my face, but it did nothing to alleviate the feeling. I tried to speak, but I couldn't even take a solid breath in. I could still hear Julian banging around the floor, likely too focused on whatever he found up there to notice. Esther made her way down to me as my throat felt like it was swelling up, and as soon as she touched me, it was over. Taking the deepest breath I've ever taken in my life, I backed down the stairs, my body screaming for me to go, go, go. I can't stay in here! I'll be in the car. I can't. Knowing Esther wouldn't leave Julian and having the keys in my pocket, I was good to just run. Tripping over my own feet, I just barely made it to the car, exhausted and out of breath. I unlocked it and climbed inside, struggling to think past the adrenaline. I don't remember passing out, but I will never forget the sound of Esther slamming her hands against the car window. I shot up from where I was, looking over at her. The panic in her eyes sent a shiver down my spine as I hit the unlock button on the door, watching as she nearly ripped the passenger side door off its hinges. I looked over her shoulder as she climbed in, expecting to see Julian. Instead, the path behind her was empty, and her voice was shrill and shaky as she shouted, "He's gone! Just go!"
From all of us on the Dissonance team, we thank you for listening. Today's episode, Dared, was written by Liz Martinez and was performed by Maddie Shower. We are coming to the end of Season 1 and our era of Liz with Hi Mom, and finally, Consequences. If you are interested in supporting Selective Dissonance, please follow us on social media and leave a review. You can also support this podcast with a small donation to help out with production for Season 2 by heading to our link tree and checking out our various support options. Our link tree can be found in the show notes and gives you access to our episode transcripts, social media, and casting call page. Our amazing intro and outro was composed by Morific. Some rights reserved unless otherwise stated. Selective Dissonance can be found anywhere you listen to podcasts. Stay tuned to check out a couple podcasts we think you'd enjoy. Can you hear us? Excellent.
Hey, it's Dean in Red, and we're the host of Essentially on the Rocks, a podcast built for after the 9-to-5.
Yes, when being professional is no longer required.
Come hang out with us. We drink whiskey, craft beer, talk shit, and laugh.
We mostly talk shit to each other's face.
And you did drink that wine I got you pretty fucking fast.
I accept this, but don't act like you don't get smashed on $2 moonshine.
We don't talk about that. Join us on Essentially on the Rocks.
New episodes released monthly.
like someone who has grown up in the era of social media and oversharing, I think that my life is important. And that my existence is purposeful because I'm here to do something great. Because of this, my inability to comprehend what that might be, and the fact that on more than one occasion, I've spent very long periods of time thinking about the fact that I might already be dead, and this is just my life flashing before my eyes, and if that's true, then why am I remembering these specific occurrences over others? All of this made me decide to start a podcast. Basically, this is just a podcast about me, my life, and kinda what I think it all means. So join me. It's gonna be a crazy ride either way, so I think you'll want to stick around for that.